Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. If you find benefit from this talk, please support the restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Human Buddha's Dhamma with your donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
So, tonight's sutta is called the Vipalasa Sutta. And we've called this Vipalasa Sutta. There's a number of translations for the Pali word Vipalasa. It's seen translated as distortions or fermentations or a number of other things. But what it really boils down to, and what John has really extracted the essence of, it is fabrications. So we're going to talk tonight about fabrications, and we're going to talk tonight about the Vipalasa Sutta. So, fundamental to the Buddhist notion of ignorance or delusion are the Vipalasas, also referred to as fabrications. The Vipalasa Sutta is a heartwood teaching, a teaching we can take true refuge in. We will look at how the themes of three marks of existence, four noble truths, five clinging aggregates, and dependent origination are woven through this sutta, and how this teaching is applied in Dhamma practice. So, let's begin. Friends, there are these four fabrications of perceptions, of the mind, of views. These four fabrications are confusing permanence with regard to impermanence, confusing pleasant with regard to what is stressful, confusing or assuming self with regard to not self, confusing attractive with regard to unattractive. These are the four fabrications of perception, of the mind, of views. So earlier, John, Jen, and Kevin mentioned how dangerous fabrications are to the practitioner, as they can easily lead one on ignoble searches. We've mentioned that several times. Taking what is impermanent, anicca, as permanent, what is inherently stressful, dukkha, as a source of satisfaction, what is without a self, anatta, to constitute a self, and seeing the unattractive, asubha, as attractive, describes a mind rooted in ignorance of four noble truths and highlights the three marks of existence. I'm going to continue Buddha's words. There are four qualities of mind that are not fabricated: knowing impermanence as impermanence, knowing stress as stress, knowing not self as not self, knowing what is unattractive as unattractive. These are the four qualities of mind that are free of fabrication. So we're just going to take this section apart a little bit and look at it. Particularly in something that has been a theme through both Kevin and John and Jen's teachings, unbinding, and particularly sensitive to unbinding. So we'll start with the first one, knowing impermanence as impermanence. So stress is occurring within impermanence. We know this. Stress is impermanent. It arises and passes away on its own. So when we understand, when we know, when we are sensitive to unbinding in our knowing that impermanence is impermanence, there is unbinding from the stress of impermanence. Knowing stress as stress. Again, these are the four qualities of mind that are not fabricated. Knowing stress as stress. We know that life in the phenomenal world is subject to stress. We know our contribution to that stress causes our individual suffering. This is the first noble truth. When we understand stress, when we understand the first noble truth, there is unbinding from stress. These first two, knowing impermanence as impermanence, knowing stress as stress, this is living life as life occurs. Life is occurring in a field of impermanence. We know that life, there is stress inherent in life. So these two, knowing impermanence as impermanence, knowing stress as stress, this is living life as life occurs. We accept this view, right view, and thus are unbound from wrong views. So continue. Knowing not self as not self. This means we're aware of our I-making, clinging to fabrications or wrong views of self. And so, Sangha, what do we do when we become aware of this, when we become aware of fabrications, wrong views of self, our I-making? What do we do? Anybody? We come back to the sensation of breathing in the body. So, again, knowing not self is not self. This means we're aware of our I-making. We're aware of clinging to fabrications or wrong views of self. So when we know what is unattractive as unattractive, we know this through right view. We know this through right view and the virtuous factors of the Eightfold Path. We see what is unattractive in our thoughts, words, and actions as unattractive, and we abandon them. Again, with refined mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, we are sensitive to unbinding. We abandon what is unattractive. These are the four qualities of mind that are free of fabrication. These are the qualities of mind of one who has taken true refuge. So we'll continue. The Buddha's words. Perceptions, the mind, and views are fabricated when perceiving permanence in impermanence, when perceiving pleasure in what is stressful, when perceiving self in what is not self, when perceiving attractiveness in the unattractive. So again, let's look at this in terms of vipalasas. So perceptions, the mind, and views are fabricated. So what are fabrications of perception, as they call in Pali, sana vipalasa? So we misperceive the information coming into us through our sense gates. That's fabrications of perception. Fabrications of the mind. This is citta vipalasa. So here, fabrications of the mind is a mind rooted in ignorance can only become further ignorant. If we're ignorant of what's occurring, if we're ignorant of Four Noble Truths, then we cannot help but give birth to another moment rooted in ignorance. So, fabrications of view, ditti vipalasa, these are wrong views of self, or clinging to fabrications. So, let's examine these again in the theme of five clinging aggregates. So, when perceiving self and what is not self, if we look at it through five aggregates, one assumes form to be the self, or the self-possessing form. Feelings to be the self, or the self-possessing feeling. One assumes the self-possessing perception. One assumes fabrications to be the self. One assumes the self-possessing consciousness. Here we see, in perceiving self and what is not self, we see five clinging aggregates. So through refined mindfulness developed in jhana meditation and the practice of the Eightfold Path, with wise discernment, we see five clinging aggregates as impermanent. We see five clinging aggregates as stressful. We see five clinging aggregates as not self. We see fabrications as fabricated. So this is one section to unpack, looking at this very short sutta in this way. Buddha continues, these beings are destroyed by wrong view. These beings have lost their minds. These beings are bound to the yoke of ignorance. We've heard that before. These beings will find no rest, wandering aimlessly from birth to death. So here, if we look at this, these beings are bound to the yoke of ignorance. These beings will find no rest, wandering aimlessly from birth to death. So these beings are bound to the yoke of ignorance in the service of me, in the service of me, the identity that is fabricated. Wandering aimlessly from birth to death, this is consciousness rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, which is this habitual feedback loop of self-centered conditioned thinking that has us wandering through samsara from birth to death, no rest, constantly craving for and clinging to impermanent phenomena, and thinking of it as me. This is me. Buddha continues, however, when awakened ones are present in the world, they bring light into the world. They teach the Dhamma that brings an end to stress. The wise will listen and regain their senses. They will clearly know impermanence as impermanence, stress as stress, not self as not self, unattractive as unattractive. Having developed right view, they abandon ignorance and bring to cessation all confusion, all deluded thinking, all stress and suffering. That's the end of the sutta. But I wanted to go back a little bit and unpack some of this. So here, when awakened ones are present in the world, they bring light into the world. They teach the Dhamma that brings an end to stress. The wise will listen and regain their senses. So here, this is implying that the wise have lost their senses, or that the senses, the sixth sense base, has been co-opted by anatta, which distorts perception and feeling. This is experienced in the mind and body as stress and disturbance. When we have regained our senses, no longer clinging, identity is a reference point occurring within impermanence, just six properties. So Kevin had referenced the Dhatuvabhanga Sutta, which goes in depth on what a human being is. And it is just these six properties. We can talk about that, or you can look that up on the website to learn more about that. But this is an important point, that when the senses are co-opted by anatta, we feel stress. What comes through our senses is stressful and creates disturbance in our body and mind. So again, when we notice that we've become distracted in our thoughts, when we notice on our cushions we've become distracted with feelings, when we notice out in the world we've become distracted with thoughts, what do? Take a breath, come back to the sensation of breathing in the body. So here we can look at this again also through dependent origination. So when awakened ones are present in the world, the wise will listen and regain their senses. We'll start by sort of unpacking dependent origination and tying it into this. So from ignorance as a requisite condition comes fabrications. Fabrications arise moment by moment in anatta's strategy to maintain delusion through self-identification with thoughts. Consciousness, bound to becoming further ignorant through the story of I. So this self-identification with thoughts is consciousness rooted in ignorance. This self-identification with thoughts is what populates the story of I. Name and form are bodily fabrications, verbal fabrications, and mental fabrications. From name and form comes the sixth sense base. Through our five physical senses and intellect comes contact. Contact is where we begin to practice cessation, where we begin the practice of the Eightfold Path. From contact comes feeling, subjective feeling, the personal experience of suffering, you name it. From feeling comes clinging. Fabricated views in order to maintain ignorance. What is clinging? Fabricated views in order to maintain ignorance. From clinging and maintaining is becoming. This is that aimlessly wandering from birth to death. The habitual feedback loop that we heard John mention in the Gara Sutta. So when awakened ones are present in the world, they bring light into the world. They teach the Dhamma that brings an end to stress. This is what we take true refuge in, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. So again, I'll read up the last part of this sutta again. They will clearly know impermanence as impermanence, stress as stress, not self as not self, unattractive as unattractive. Having developed right view, they abandon ignorance and bring to cessation all confusion, all deluded thinking, all stress and suffering. So here we see that the cessation of fabrications comes through awakened right view. We know that right view is developed through understanding of the Four Noble Truths and the practice of the Eightfold Path. By taking true refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, we are accepting life as it occurs, without needing it to be different, understanding where we are and what we can and can't do about it. By remaining mindful of the breath and the body, thoughts, feelings, and the quality of our minds, we become more aware of our habitual clinging to wrong views of self and gain greater clarity. Again, another reference to right view. So in gaining greater clarity, being mindful of the four foundations of mindfulness, upon contact, we know this is not me. Upon contact with sense phenomena, upon contact with thought, upon contact with feeling, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am. When we know that, when we're sensitive to that, the veil of ignorance is lifted, the pain chain is broken, one has developed right view. Here we know unbinding, and we are calm. Short sutta. We can go around the room if anyone has questions or comments. Mary, let's start with you.
As you hear it, and as you've described it and illuminated and unpacked it, it just makes so much sense. It's like having a flashlight and shining it on the things that you're doing that are causing your suffering. There's so much in here, but it just makes sense as you listen to it. I guess I can't explain it back clearly, but I thought it was very well done, and it's something that I know I can take off the cushion with me. Good. As I go and navigate other parts of my life. I mean, maybe like some people, or maybe some people can relate, that when we first start doing this, we recognize wrong speech, all these things, we have direct experiences quite frequently. And then as you really get into this, you really have to deal with all the wrong views in your head, all the fabrications, and you have to hold yourself accountable. And I think this sutta is very helpful for that kind of self-awareness when we're off the cushion. So yeah. Thank you, Matt. Great job.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's the self-awareness that you mentioned, and particularly off the cushion. That's, when we can, like I said earlier, knowing impermanence as impermanence, knowing stress as stress, that's living life as it occurs. When we understand that, we're in the world as it's occurring. And when we understand that, which includes understanding the First Noble Truth, we understand stress. therefore we are sensitive to unbinding from stress. So our life off the cushion as it occurs is calm.
Outstanding, Matt. Thank you so much. It's a great presentation of the Vipalasa Sutta. The conclusion of this sutta, and it's mentioned twice, the Buddha concludes the sutta twice within the sutta, knowing impermanence as impermanence, stress as stress, not self as not self, and unattractive as unattractive, speaks directly to the prevailing spiritual practices of the Buddha's time and our time. In other words, knowing impermanence as or trying to use a certain practice, say worship of Avalokiteshvara, as the resolution for my lack of understanding, is knowing impermanence as Avalokiteshvara. Substituting a chant for Buddhist practice is knowing stress not as stress, but knowing stress as a chant. And this is really what the Buddha is referring to here. It's the substitutions that we make for the understanding that we're seeking. And it's the essence of fabrications, isn't it? To know stress as a chant rather than to know stress as the Buddha teaches. Or to know anatta, the not-self characteristic, as the substitute, the common substitute, is nothingness or emptiness, isn't it? And so that is knowing not-self as emptiness. And it simply is such a contradiction to the reality that you brought out. You really unpacked it in a beautiful way. So thank you, Matt.
Thank you, John. Yeah, I think that was really well said, John, in that these ideas of substitutions. And you know, we can all look into our own lives and see where we substitute the reality of what's occurring with what we want or what we don't want. And ultimately that's fabricated. That's a fabrication and only leads to more confusion.
Hey, Matt?
So thank you, John.
Yes, and the most significant aspect of that is as it applies to authentic or inauthentic or ignoble or noble or ignoble searches. Again, it's the Buddha's concern is that we're actually practicing the Dhamma. So fabrications that might arise over Saturday night's chariot races are interesting, but they don't really relate to the Dhamma. It's my fabrication about what I'm substituting for reality that needs to be the focus of my Dhamma practice. Because you can fabricate anything, but what's most significant is me fabricating something that alters the Dhamma in a way that makes it accessible or useful to me, but where I don't have to actually change a fabrication. So that's not knowing that. Such a powerful sutta, isn't it?
It's really, really sharp, yeah. Really dark. David, did you have something?
Yeah, just the reference to the wise being confused. Is that what you're talking about with the accommodations?
Let's see.
It was right after the line with referencing the wise, and then
The wise will listen and regain their senses.
Yes, is that referencing?
Yes.
Losing that
yes.
Focus and accommodating and.
Exactly.
Okay.
When the Buddha is referring to the wise, he's always referring to people that know the authentic Dhamma.
And that's, you know, that's also, you know, each of us when we fall off the path in life sometimes.
Yeah.
And lose our senses through, you know, the stress that's inherent in the world. So this is regaining our senses through the teachings of the Buddha, the Dhamma, is what that refers to. Thank
he
you.
Knows it. Matt, why don't you see if Matt wants to say hello?
Matt H., are you there? You are there, but
I'll unmute his mic. Oh no, he did it. Hello, Matt H.
Hi. I'm just enjoying listening and learning.
I couldn't hear that.
He just said he's enjoying listening and he appreciates it.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you joined us tonight. Welcome to our Sangha. Be careful, though, because once you're in, you can't get out.
Banished to the waiting room. Jane.
Well, I wasn't surprised that that was, you did that very well. Because you've been sharing that with me for quite a while now. I came to you and I was super stressed, and I still remember the first time you told me, you know, that's the first noble truth that exists. And it's like, I had no idea what a noble truth was, or I don't know. The generous spirit, I mean, you shared that with me. Led me to the
Dhamma.
I love you. Thank you.
Teacher Ram. Yeah, a nice little sutta here. It's beautiful clarity in it. A lot of the short suttas can be a little hard to get into, but this one was very clear, laid out very logically, and you followed all the lines out. I mean, this sutta sits in the spider web of the Dhamma. You know, all the lines go out to clearly to places that we know, and you tied it right back. Thank you
Trevor.
Thank you so much, Matt. Beautiful sutta, beautiful teaching. Appreciate your clarity on this one. I'm with Ram. I really loved how you drew connections with dependent origination and clinging aggregates. This was a very, very helpful teaching. So sincere thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Holmes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, all right. I get confused on the mute and the unmute button. So, well, thank you. I'm still trying to sort a lot of this stuff out.
I hope that helps.
Kind of the question I may have that you might want to address is that I think my biggest problem is just distraction of it, all kinds. It's hard for me to get myself quiet enough to even stop to remember to breathe. Yeah. And so I don't know what you can do with that, but I'd be interested to hear something.
Well, that's a good question. When we when we know stress as stress, when we know impermanence as impermanence, we know that thoughts are arising, feelings are arising and passing away on their own all day long. You think a million different things during the day. You don't remember every single thing that you thought. You feel a million different ways during the day. You don't remember every single way that you felt. That's because the nature of thoughts and feelings are impermanent. They're arising and passing away on their own all day long. So when thoughts or feelings come up that are distracting, You don't have to do anything to get rid of them. They're impermanent. They'll come and go on their own. So part of what you start to notice when you develop concentration through jhana meditation is how much time you spend trying to get rid of thoughts or feelings or emotions or sensations that are uncomfortable or distracting. And once you start to develop the Dhamma in this way, you start to get better and better at coming back to the sensation of breathing in your body. When a thought comes up or a feeling comes up or a sensation comes up or an emotion comes up that's distracting. And like the Buddha had said in here and referenced in other suttas, when we become distracted by fabrications, we come back to the sensation of breathing in the body and say to ourselves, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am. So right away, we're sensitive to unbinding. We're unbinding from the stress of that distraction because we know it's impermanent. We know that it's stress. And we know that it's not who we are. So I hope that helps, Josh.
Can I say a second?
Sure.
I'm an expert at this. I've been on a first name basis with my distractions for many decades. And the secret is you keep going. You sit down on your cushion and you do jhana. And you get distracted and you come back from the distractions. And as Matt told me, even if you do it once in a meditation, it's a good meditation. That's all there is to it.
Ram, I'm really impressed that you remember that. That was a long time ago.
Thank you, Matthew. That was helpful.
Good. Thank you.
Great question, Josh.
Becky, I miss you.
I miss you too. And that was, first of all, I just want to echo Mary and echo Ram and echo Trevor, because this was a short and sweet sutta that was just so precise, so clear. And like Kevin said, I think it was Kevin or whoever, you tied it all up, you brought it all together. But the thing I really want to thank you for is that you did for me what you just tried to do for Josh, Joshua, when I first came to you. And that is amazingly helpful to realize that all of those thoughts and distractions that you're having all through the day, you don't have to deal with them. They will just go away on their own. And you just have to keep meditating to gain the concentration to recognize that as you're making contact and going through your day. It sounds simple, but it's not easy.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you. Said. Thank you, Matt. That was very good. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Jen.
I love you, man. It literally, like, I can remember where I was, almost what I was wearing the first time that you said to me what you said to Josh tonight. And I mean, it has played over in my head for years and years and years. And it fell on me the same way tonight that it fell on me at the time that you first said it. And it reminds me of something that I wanted to say when I first started listening to everybody's comments, which was you spoon feed the Dhamma like medicine. You give people the spoonful that they need in the, at that moment of time. And that is exactly what you're talking about in this sutta, of being the light in the world. And what hit me, what struck me tonight was just knowing anatta as anatta is, I mean, I know it. I know not self is not self, but boy, I ignore it a lot because I want to be distracted. And that relates to what Mary said, that really you just have to be accountable. And that was the spoonful that I needed to hear tonight. So thank you.
Thank you. Awesome. Mike.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
Good, my friend. How are you doing?
I love your presentation.
Thank you.
I don't want to try to unravel anything because I'm afraid I'll confuse the whole room after you've done such a great job. So I just want to say thank you for you so eloquently leading from one understanding of impermanence and of the not-self and to the next, and giving us a clear understanding of what's needed to reach right view or to attain right view, which obviously from that perspective unfolds a lot of what we're trying to learn in, you know, with the Dhamma. So I do greatly appreciate for your clarity and your ability to interpret this and present it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it so much.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for the teaching. It was very, very eloquently put, you know.
It really was.
I have nothing else to add. It was just very good to listen, you know, to hear you teach. Your manner of teaching.
You're going to go places in the the world of the Buddha, I'll tell you right now. All these teachers are.
Thank you, guys.
All the teaching was beautiful. Thank you.
Contenders.
Teacher Kevin.
I just want to thank you for the tremendous insight and pasana that you provided there to bring it back to where the Dhamma resides and where this all resolves. And that's in our human life, in our human mind, and our human body. And that's letting life occurs. And I also would agree with Jen and others that, you know, you do have a sort of Moggallana teaching style, the way you're able to serve the medicine appropriate time, the appropriate dosages. And as another fellow teacher of yours, I could take great wisdom from that. And so I appreciate that was said, and thank you.
Thank you, brother. Karen.
Okay, I muted myself. Thank you so much, Matt. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I really, really look forward to returning to these teachings. So, John, these are going to be available. You've recorded all of this?
Yep, they'll be up early next week, all of them.
Okay, fabulous. Because I was distracted during your talk because a lot of reasons, but mainly my kitty on my lap. But I will go back and listen again. But love, love, love hearing all of you guys. Such a treat to be on this retreat this weekend. Thank you.
Glad you're here, Karen.
Thank you.
David.
Hello, Matt.
Hey, brother.
You want your teachers to be wise and respectful of the subject and patient and stewards of what we have here, the Sangha and what John's created. And that's what I'm taking away with this weekend retreat. And I look forward to tomorrow's Ram's teaching. But there's a comfort knowing that this will continue. So thank you.
Thank you, my friend. John?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, I'm still probably going to teach once in a while. No, I noticed that everybody's looking forward to Ram tomorrow. But I might actually teach for a few minutes too, you know. I'm sitting here as stunned as an old man can get. And looking forward to our fourth teacher tomorrow. But listening to Jen, Kevin, and Matt today, I can't help but think of when I first started teaching meditation, and then a few years later when Matt and I met up and decided that we wanted to do this, you know, establish these teachings in Frenchtown and see what would happen to them. And this is really amazing, you know, that there is, I don't know how many teachers there are that are teaching just what the Buddha taught. I don't think there's many, and I don't know of any, except the ones that are here. And it's just incredible when you think about what has developed here, and the level of teaching. Yeah, I mean you got to know the Dhamma to teach it, and you all know the Dhamma, and the way you've expressed it is just remarkable. You know, you're teaching an old dog some new tricks about this too, and boy, I can't say anything more but that. So.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you all, really. This, you know, the Buddha, the three jewels are what we're doing, you know. That's what we're doing. Yeah. And it's really an honor to hold the three jewels with all of you. And it's been years now, which is really special.
Yeah. It's so remarkable how much we've all grown in the,
it's not
conceptual to any of you, but it's especially to our teachers. There's no conceptual or fabricated teaching here. It's all from the heart. That's just remarkable. I've sat with some of the world's foremost Buddhist teachers, and nobody can teach it like you guys, really. Yeah, it's all right. I'm gonna stop saying that. They're going to want a raise, and no raises during COVID-19. So.
Got any toilet paper?
What's the toilet? Yeah, I'll pay you. I got some toilet paper from BJ, so I'll pay you in rolls of toilet paper.
I'll take some chocolates from Rom.
Oh, yeah.
Anita.
We can.
Matt, are you finished?
Yes.
Good. I don't mean good. So we always have a little Saturday night social. We're not going to have it tonight because Anita didn't distribute chocolates to all of us. But the one question I ask always is, what's one thing that you learned this weekend that you didn't know? Something you learned about the Dhamma? So let's go around the room briefly. And I just like to hear what you have to say about that. Mary.
Well, I guess I'm going to look at what we just talked about. I don't think it's always that you're, you know, in the beginning you're learning a lot of new things, but eventually you're learning about the nuances of things or where you might be omitting something from your practice or whether the rigor and commitment of your practice and concentration could be better. But tonight, I mean, looking at you know, impermanence the way we did, I guess there were just insights that I feel are very relevant. And I also think that often what you learn is what you are ready to hear,
yeah.
Either because of something you're not doing skillfully in your life or, you know, they're suffering, but you didn't know your role in why that suffering exists. So I think it's the nuances and hearing things in different ways, or I feel like I heard a lot of things I've never read before or heard before in our discussion. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not, today. And so I heard a lot of new, fresh things that can really help me. And I guess the aha to answer your question is that I really feel like things penetrated so that I can take them off the cushion with me. And that's, you know, that's worth the price of admission, John.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. And so the contrast between what you just said and the question Josh asked of Matt earlier, you are talking about the real subtle fine points of the Dhamma because you've been practicing it for a few years. And Josh is looking for just the establishment of the beginnings of jhana. It's kind of like the two ends of the path, isn't it? And this is just right where we are. You're both on the right path, even though it's different points of the path, aren't you?
Well, and the answer is the same, that we each need to deepen our concentration through our practice. And Josh, when you recognize that you're not distracted, or you recognize that you are distracted, and you can then say, oh, I'm distracted, and I'm going to, oh, yeah, they told me to take a breath, and I'm going to go take a breath. That's a baby step.
Yep.
Not even. That's a big step. And I guess that's just another version of what we're all taking away from this, that it comes back to coming back to the practice, coming back to your breath, and improving your concentration.
Yeah.
I'm finding there's a kind of an ongoing battle between my ego self and wanting to be distracted and fighting that and trying to get back to...
Then you've joined the club.
Yeah, that's the practice, Josh. I mean, that really is the basic practice. You're just coming up against something that the Buddha says is like foam on the ocean. There's no real substance to it. But since you've been feeding it your whole life, it seems like it's real, but it isn't. It will yield to gentle but continued right effort, and it just falls away. Yeah. Anybody else learned one thing that you didn't know before, or maybe a new nuance?
Just briefly to continue on that, with the talk you gave last night, it's how we get to know the Dhamma is that we experience the cessation. We experienced calm, and that's what we can say to Josh to see for yourself. Come at Hepasiko, like the Buddha said, to come try it out. And, in time, you're gentle with yourself and you continue with the practice, your understanding will grow and develop. So thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. And every one of us was where Josh is right now. All of us began in the same place that you're at. And it's just a little bit of time and, you become... brilliant meditators like the rest of us. I can tell by your questions, Josh, that you're perfectly well focused on the Dhamma. So good for you. Michael, what's one thing you learned new this weekend?
I learned how much I don't know about the Dhamma.
That's a good answer. That's an outstanding answer.
I'm following the program. I'm trying my best to follow the program, as you know. What I did like about, I wouldn't say that I didn't know this, but I actually gave me a different perspective on things, or made me more aware, or will make me more aware. It's like I liked when Jen gave her teaching this morning, and she brought up the whole idea of unbinding. I really like that. I like it. It's like she finished it off and said, hey, this is what we're doing jhana meditation for, and unbinding was why, or the reason why we do it. It's not a goal. It's something that occurs when we let go of all those distractions and and our mind is clear. So that to me kind of like gave me some clarity and a better understanding, I think, of what we're trying to do here. I like what Kevin had said in relation to Ananda, that if it wasn't for Ananda, the Buddha's teachings probably would have been lost. A historical bit of information there that, hey, we wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for Ananda, really, you know. So that's something I didn't have any idea of, and I appreciate
that's right effort. That's right effort. Ananda, you know, expressed a lot of right effort over his whole life.
Yeah, and you know, and I appreciate you bringing that up and educating the rest of us in relation to that, because that's an extremely important thing to know, you know. Or obviously, if he didn't become awakened, that would be a greater, you know. But he, as you said, Kevin, didn't you say that he became awakened after the Buddha had passed? Is that correct?
I think John and Ram could, but I think it was a couple of months after.
Okay.
Yeah, and the reference to Ananda being one of the people primarily responsible for the Buddha's teaching still being here, it's because of his word-perfect memory, but also the way that the first Buddhist council was established. And Ananda was able to recount all the teachings of the Buddha that he was present for because of his word-perfect memory. But he had that memory because of the Dhamma, because of his deep level of concentration. So it's the Dhamma itself that preserved the Dhamma. Mm-hmm. But
Way of putting it.
Yeah. And he wasn't actually he wasn't allowed to be speaking at that first council because he was not enlightened at the time.
Yep.
Wow.
So he sat down and just made this supreme effort to awaken. And after a lot of, the story shows a lot of frustration in his effort to you know, because you're trying to do something that is really not triable. The story is like that. There were accounts at the time of that you really are going to be best awakened standing up, or others said lying down. And the story about Ananda is that one night he finally said, screw it, and I'm going to bed. And in the middle of going to bed, like laying down, his awakening happened.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
Great historical, factual dissertation there.
You bring him to life.
Thank you.
There's one other tradition that we'll honor, but I'll see you all again tomorrow at 8:30 or a little bit earlier than that for Match Qigong, and we'll have our Ram will present tomorrow morning at 9:30, and we'll conclude our retreat at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. But does anybody have anything you'd like to add or say or question or comment about?
Yeah, I wanted to jump in there, John. In terms of your question, I think... for me, I learn a lot from teachers, not just what they say, but who they are as individuals, as people, and their presence. And I feel very fortunate, very blessed to be part of this Sangha, where we have so many teachers who are compassionate and focused, deeply committed. That was certainly coming through. And also full of integrity and humility. So just your presence says so much in addition to what you taught today. So thank you so much for that.
They're good examples of the Dhamma, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. Yeah. And, you know, same goes for Ram, although we haven't heard from Ram yet. I know many of you have, and I'm very eager, Ram, to hear from you and learn from you tomorrow. So thank you all so much for what you've given to us.
Yeah, I think, John, we have to thank you again for teaching all of us, and I think the teachers can thank you as well for teaching us, you know, how to teach.
Yeah.
Yep.
What a pleasure and an honor. You know, it really is. So it wasn't our first retreat. Matt will remember which one it was when we first, when Toe first started his tradition. It's just a little song by a gentleman that I actually knew quite well. Well, let's just play it, and then we'll see you in the morning. But we can't go through Saturday night without this. Artie, stop it.
Without one of our jams.
Can everybody hear it?
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.